You waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow? Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, January 21st, Clinton Street Resistance will screen King, a filmed record, From Montgomery to Memphis, a historic documentary, nominated for a Best Documentary Oscar in 1971. The screen benefits the Children's Book Bank. Again, that's King, a film record, showing Monday, January 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. This evening, we are here with some folks doing some amazing work around the case of political prisoner Leonard Peltier, and we are here with Larry Hildes and Karen Hildes. And how are y'all doing tonight?
Good, thank you.
Right on. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Really, thanks for taking the time and all the great
thank
work.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Yes. Let's get right into it. I think a lot of our listeners are familiar with the case of Leonard Peltier. If they're not, maybe we can just give a brief kind of breakdown of who Leonard is and why this is important.
Leonard was and is an organizer with the American Indian Movement and a real leader. AIM was, and he was at Alcatraz. He was involved with the fish wars up in Washington State when the tribes were fighting for their treaty right to fish their traditional waters. And AIM was asked by traditional folks at Pine Ridge, South Dakota, to come out and protect them from a death squad, a literally named goon squad, Guardians of the Oglala Nation, that the FBI had trained to support the tribal chair who was interested in moving people to get money from uranium and gold mining and line his pocket. There was a shootout when the FBI came in with guns blazing, supposedly investigating a pair of stolen boots and looking for a guy who wasn't even there, and firing into the compound where AIM was. Folks fired back. Someone who was not Leonard shot the two FBI agents in the head. One AIM activist was killed by the FBI agents before that, and in a very how shall I put this?
One-sided, jury-rigged?
Yeah, a very rigged trial after the first two folks to go on trial were acquitted for self-defense. The FBI made sure they got somebody, and Leonard got two life terms plus and has been in prison now for 44 years.
Right, because Bob Robidoux and Dino Butler had gotten off on self-defense in the first place, and then also there was this kind of extraneous extradition of Leonard from Canada as well, which was
with a false witness, yeah, Myrtle Poorbear, who had never met Leonard.
Yeah, they cooked up a false statement for Myrtle Poorbear, and they also, for example, were telling the judge pretty much every day that AIM was coming after him, mm-hmm. and therefore he needed an FBI escort everywhere he went in order to protect him. And
you're starting out with a conservative judge. They moved the case from Cedar Rapids, where the first trial was, to Bismarck, North Dakota. North Dakota is not exactly a friendly place for Indians, yeah. for First Nations folks, mm-hmm. to put it mildly. And Bismarck is very conservative. The judge was very conservative, and they had him terrified to make sure that they got what they wanted, and they did.
Wasn't he the judge who later on said that he was sorry for the way things went?
Yes.
Yeah, and
he
found out he'd been manipulated and lied to, and so he actually has become a Leonard Peltier supporter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the FBI falsified ballistics reports. They falsified witness statements. Anything they could possibly do to make sure they got a conviction.
Yep.
Right. Well, also there's this long jury of them really always making a fuss when there's recent, you know, legal updates and events around Leonard and things of that nature, which kind of leads us to where
there's two former FBI agents mm-hmm. who make it part of their retirement yeah. life to make sure that they know any place where he's being spoken of, they try to mm-hmm. either put out misinformation around the event.
Every art show, every speaking event, every parole attempt, every appeal,
they weigh
every
in.
Petition for clemency, mm-hmm. they show up
right.
yep.
in some form. Mm-hmm. And one of them, that's all he does. We've been unable to find out anything else that the man does with his life.
Right.
Yep.
Probably not much. And one of the recent events that had happened was out here in the Northwest with the art exhibit, and
right.
that's kind of one of the ongoing, newer oncoming connection with his case.
Right, and that's right. how we got involved initially.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that one?
Sure. The state of Washington's Labor and Industries Department, which is the equivalent of everybody else's Department of Labor, has an annual Native American Heritage Show where they put up artwork in the rotunda of the building. They have dance and music and cultural exhibitions, and they give out a lot of information. And one of their managers was very sympathetic to Leonard and suggested that they include four paintings by him. And he went up through channels, and Elle and I knew who Leonard was and examined the case.
They looked at the potential for controversy
yeah.
and said, mm-hmm. it's okay, we can handle this.
Right. So they indeed hung four of his paintings, none of which is explicitly political, but there's a lot of culture in there. And Leonard is a very, very accomplished painter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how he does a lot of his public expression, his outreach, and draws people's attention to his case. And the art went up at the moment that Obama was considering clemency petitions and pardons right before he left office.
Mm-hmm.
So the timing was crucial. 2 weeks into the exhibition, having heard from the two FBI agents and a couple of other, supposedly one relative of one of the FBI agents from the shootout and one other former FBI agent, as opposed to dozens of supportive.
Yeah, they got comments. Lots of support. Mm-hmm. They got lots of people right. saying, this is wonderful. When yeah. they put out the word that they were going to take it down, they got even more support saying, please don't take this down. It's very important mm-hmm. that this stay up.
In spite of that, they took the paintings down halfway through the exhibition, claiming that Leonard himself was too controversial and insisting that they could do that because it was their exhibition and therefore their free speech, and because the controversy was about him, not his art.
Well, and it's also very chilling to have the government argue for its own free speech rights mm-hmm. as opposed to its citizens' free speech rights, that their free speech rights would trump any free speech rights of any particular citizen. That's a really chilling argument mm-hmm. when you start to think about all the implications.
So I got contacted by Leonard's son, Chauncey, who is one of the administrators of the artwork and had provided the paintings. And he and Leonard hired us to try and get the artwork back up first, which I attempted to do. And they kept coming back with the same justifications and then said, oh, the exhibition's over anyway, so it doesn't matter by that point. So we sued under the First Amendment and based on the government's discrimination on the basis of who Leonard is. Mm-hmm. And government filed a motion for summary judgment, a dismissal motion, making exactly the arguments we just talked about, that it was their free speech because it was their exhibition and that you could discriminate based on who the speaker is if they're too controversial. Interestingly enough, one of the main cases that says that you can't do that, that you can't limit speech because of who the speaker is, ironically, is Citizens United. With all the awful effects that Citizens United had, the one good thing is that it says you can't do that. And we have a very conservative federal judge in Tacoma who loved that argument. So we cited that along with a tradition of cases about controversial speakers who the government tried to silence. Many of them Nazis. I hate citing those too. But and we pointed out that the art was still Leonard's, and it was not owned by the government. And the case law says that in a case where the government owns the artwork and decides where and when it wants to display it, that they can do that. But otherwise, it's the artist. And the court agreed completely and said it was Leonard's free speech rights, and moreover, Leonard was deprived of the ability to communicate about his case by the artwork being taken down, because there was a link to the website. There was a link to whoisleonardpeltier.info, which is the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee website, and it was running on a message board throughout the building with a picture of Leonard mm-hmm. when the exhibition was up. And they advertised publicly that they had paintings by Leonard and what a big deal that was. So the judge...
So it's really important to understand, first of all, that the judge shot down the argument that the government was making. That was very important. But it's also very important that the judge specifically said that Leonard had a right to talk about his case and try to persuade people to support him in his case mm-hmm. and through his paintings, and that the paintings were his First Amendment rights for that part of his life as well.
Right,
it's not
right.
just this general amorphous First mm-hmm. Amendment right. It's also specifically, the judge specifically said he has a right to talk to people right. about his case
self
and what's
defense,
happening.
Right?
Yeah.
Which it's always been about in the first place.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It was always a case of self-defense, right?
Yeah.
Native rights, land rights.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing. So it's
right.
interesting to see how this case, I mean, really, it actually kind of yeah. like speaks to that. Now, there's been a long history of Leonard's case, and
yeah.
and y'all have plugged in fairly recently with,
right.
with all the new, if I can say, new iterations, if you will, of, I mean,
yeah.
everything going on in the world, in our country, with you know, with the current administration, right? So before we talk about kind of the more recent movements with the case, can you at least give a little bit of a review, even if people know or a little bit about Leonard or don't know? I mean, how many people have been doing legal defense and all the different iterations? That's why I'm using the term iterations. I mean, it was, you know, we had Obama, we had Clinton, we had all, you know, and some of the important people, right? And yet not Leonard, and not to mention that a lot of times when you talk to people in the community about Leonard, if they do know him, he said, oh, he's still locked up? And you're like, oh, gosh, yeah. Because people just don't believe. I mean, it's been that long. I remember, you know, not me, but, you know, somebody will tell me, I remember, you know, when people were tabling for Leonard and, you know, the 70s and 80s. It's like, people still are, you know. Yep.
People are still fighting for him.
Well, that's right. And that's what the government does. That's why one of the reasons they make political prisoners and they disappear people into the system.
Right.
So they become invisible. You can't hear them. You can't see them. People forget that they're there.
Yeah.
It's
one
hard
of the more
to
recent
organize
things.
From prison.
Exactly. One of the recent decisions by the Bureau of Prisons about 5 years ago was that they were no longer going to allow people to be videotaped. So you couldn't, now you can't make movies about the political prisoners.
Exactly. And we're fighting that as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of, it's kind of intimidating to think about the other lawyers who have sat in this chair. I mean, it's the greatest civil rights lawyers of the last 50 years. Yeah. Bill Kunstler and Bruce Ellison and briefly Len Wineglass, and there's a long list of absolutely stellar attorneys who've represented, and Bruce is actually still on the case with us. I am lead counsel now because Bruce's health is kind of mixed anyway. But there was an original, the trial went on in 70. Leonard wasn't captured for a while. He went back to Oregon and then fled to Canada, as we talked about. And the FBI fabricated evidence to get him deported, which is still a major controversy in Canada.
Extradited.
And people are extradited. Extradited from Canada to here. And people are very angry about that in Canada still.
Yeah, we've spoken to Canadian people who are still angry about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's quite a big support network in
in
a lot of countries, I guess, but Canada being one.
Yeah, Canada in particular, Europe. But, so then he went on trial in 76, and it was to show you that it's both parties, too. It was Ford's Justice Department. By the time that he was convicted and came up for sentencing, it was Jimmy Carter's Justice Department, that great paragon of defender of human rights.
The beacon of light.
Yeah, he's been way better after he got out of being a president than while he was president.
Aren't they all?
Yeah, that's true.
And, yeah. And and Kunstler and Ellison and others initially appealed based on the fundamental unfairness of the trial and lost in the Eighth Circuit. And then the circuit split and they were up in the Tenth Circuit with evidence that the FBI had falsified the ballistics reports to make it look like it was a gun that Leonard had when it wasn't. And there are people out there who know who actually fired the shots. I am not one of them, but it was not Leonard. Leonard was in the compound at least a half mile away from where the agents were shot point blank. So they faked that. They faked witness reports. They intimidated a bunch of witnesses into falsely testifying. They tampered with the jury. And that came up in the Tenth Circuit, which agreed with a lot of that and then said it didn't matter and upheld the conviction. So as a result, Leonard has been in for 44 years, and he was at Marion, Illinois, when that was the maximum security prison for the country. the Supermax, and he then was in Leavenworth and organizing in all these places and working with other political prisoners and mentoring young Native American prisoners.
For folks tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland, and we're here with civil rights attorney Larry Hildes and Karen Hildes as well, talking about the case of political prisoner Leonard Peltier. Speaking of Leonard moving around so much, now he's in Coleman, Florida.
Right.
Where he's been in Coleman, Florida, yeah. And now we're talking about movement from there. And
right.
What's up with that? What's the latest?
Well, he was moved to Coleman as a punishment because a previous cellmate had put a wire into a light circuit to run a radio from, so he could listen to the radio.
Gosh forbid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was long gone when they just, so they punished Leonard by sending him to Coleman, to the maximum security prison. And it's this isolated, 75 miles north of Tampa, nothing around it. It's a federal prison complex.
Coleman, Florida is only the prison. That's all that's there.
Yeah, seven prisons of different federal grades in this compound with no town. Nearest, if you could call it civilization, is a Walmart 15 miles away. The nearest actual town is almost 30. So, and he has not been treated well at Coleman, although we're working with, you know, we get things. We're able to get his sweat lodge repaired. We're able to get people in to see him who are being excluded. And little by little, we've gotten him stuff. But he's not in good health, and he's far away from his family and his tribe. He's filed a petition, and it's been backed by his case manager in the prison system, to move him to Oxford, Wisconsin, which is a medium security prison, as opposed to maximum where he's been, and would be much closer to his family and much closer to his tribe. And his tribe has offered to take responsibility for him. And if he's released, to have him released into their responsibility, which is a long way off at this point. Mm-hmm. He's applied for parole several times. He's been denied each time because he's not repentant. He hasn't apologized for a crime that he didn't commit, mm-hmm. which is the dilemma with political prisoners. He did not do what he's accused of, so he can't really repent or atone for it. And we're signed on as friends of the court, as amicus, to a class action that's being brought by political prisoners who have been denied parole arbitrarily. And political prisoners are denied parole disproportionately to the general prison population. In fact, the system is so unfair that Congress got rid of the parole board, except for certain cases that were grandfathered in, and most of those are political prisoner cases. So yeah. Everybody else serves their time and they're done. Political prisoners stay in and in and mm-hmm. in.
So how does the class action lawsuit kind of relate to his parole case, or is it even like a standalone thing? Because it sounds like there's several things that are kind of in the makings of being filed, from the artwork, you know, being taken down case with the freedom of speech stuff. You got, you know, his movement to another place, which also intimates that he should be in a lower security facility.
Yeah.
And then there's the larger lawsuit for national U.S. held political prisoners, and then his case, right?
So there's a lot of moving parts to this.
We are at some point we're going to do another parole application, an mm-hmm. interim application. We're not ready to do that yet for various reasons, but we will. So yeah, I mean, we're basically trying to bring as many fronts as we can, and we're looking at appeal grounds that have not been used before, and some new arguments, And we're in the early stages of coming up with some of those. But mm-hmm. I can't talk about them yet.
Oh, okay.
And we're using the First Amendment case to bring as much attention as we can to Leonard's case and to educate the public about it.
Right,
It's big news in Washington. It's big news in the Northwest. Trying to make it bigger news nationally. And we're trying to get we're going to ask the court to order the Bureau of Prisons to bring Leonard to the trial and have him there to testify in Tacoma, which would be a very big deal.
Yeah.
And people would be able to hear and see him mostly for the first time. It's very hard to get into the prison
mm-hmm, right.
in Coleman. I know we've gotten some other people onto his list, but it's very difficult. So we want to get him publicly out there, and we also want to force the FBI agents to actually talk under cross-examination about what they think they're doing and why.
Mm-hmm.
And that's set for trial next January. Mm-hmm. So that we have time to maneuver to get those things.
Right. So when it comes to, you know, I mean, legal defense and outreach, I mean, there's a lot of needs there for people to get involved. One is on a fundraising piece. Another is awareness. I mean, they all relate to each other. And then, of course, there's sort of maybe kind of action items we can check off as we go along.
Yeah.
I mean, we've asked people, right, to write the letter for moving, right?
Yeah.
So that's something people could do recently.
And that's on the website. There's uh-huh. and,
yeah,
there's some directions.
There's an office in Grand Prairie, Texas, where you can send letters and that's the office that determines whether or not he's transferred.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And people can get that at
whoisleonardpeltier.info.
Right.
Yeah.
Very important. It's .info.
Yeah.
And what about the things that will be coming up? I mean, should people be ready to also kind of write letters for parole and things of that nature? Or what other kind of things you think are recent items people can plug into?
That will come up sooner rather than later, and I don't know exactly what the timing is going to be, but mm-hmm. we will be asking people to write the parole board, and we will probably be asking for letters to Congress and the White House asking for clemency. We're not at this moment,
mm-hmm.
but...
right now let's focus on getting him moved back to his family.
Yeah,
that
and
is
the
most
thing
important
is,
thing.
Is medical care. He had open heart surgery a few months ago, and we're not emphasizing, and he's got diabetes, he's 74 years old, he's got a bunch of stuff going on. He's been in prison for 44 years, so not a healthy condition to be in.
Right.
So at this point, we're backburnering the medical stuff to try and get him out, because for a little while they were playing games and putting a medical hold on the transfer, which we don't want. Once we get him transferred, then the medical stuff is going to be the next immediate demand,
mm-hmm.
and we'll be asking for letters to the prison that hopefully he will be in.
Yeah.
And if he's not transferred, then we'll be asking for letters to Coleman demanding that he get medical treatment.
Right. How does that work with when we talk about the need for people's medical care? I mean, the prisons, I mean, obviously we know, you know, they don't care. I mean, largely wardens don't care. The state doesn't really care, especially for the political prisoners, but probably more or less for like all prisoners.
Yeah. No, that's for all prisoners.
Yeah. Right. And so, you know, I mean, is it, it's a pressure thing more than it's financial, right? I mean, they're sort of responsible for people inside, right? So,
yeah.
So it's like we have to just make a fuss about it, it sounds like.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They won't do it very often unless direct pressure is applied and it becomes embarrassing.
Yeah.
They respond to embarrassment, and they respond to situations where they're hearing over and over from people, because then it's easier to give in and give him the treatment than it is to keep listening to
right
the
right
constant
well that's
demands.
A great anecdote for for Martin Luther King holiday, right? Yeah. That important message of, yeah, you know, dare to struggle, dare to win, right?
Yeah.
So you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thanks so much to our guests this evening, Larry Hills, Karen Hills. We'll see you again soon, and we'll be keeping folks up to breath what's going on with the cases. Of course, you can find out everything at whoisleonardpeltier.info. That's whoisleonardpeltier.info. And of course, thanks to our amazing engineer, Mr. Michael Fogtalis. And free them all.
And thank you, Adam. Thank you for all the work you put in.
And we will.
Radio is proud to co-sponsor the NAACP kickoff to Black History Month on Saturday, January 26th at 1 p.m. at the Fort Vancouver Library in Vancouver, Washington. The NAACP kickoff to Black History Month features performances from African drummers, actors and storytellers, artist talks, a presentation by the Buffalo Soldiers of Fort Vancouver, and much more. Again, that's the NAACP kickoff to Black History on Saturday, January 26th at 1 p.m. at the Fort Vancouver Library, 901 C Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.